A key leader in the Illinois legislature talks about the unprecedented session and the teaching of Illinois kids impacted by a virus, school shutdown, and budget concerns in the cities. The Illinois legislature met a week ago to hash over plans to restart the state, bring back the economy, and pay for it all. Lawmakers everywhere are telling people to prepare for deep cuts. In Illinois, it could also have an impact on education. Noreen Hammond is the assistant minority leader in the Illinois House, but she's also serving on the House Higher Education Committee, and she represents Macomb, the home of Western Illinois University. She sat down with us for an extended interview from a Republican in a democratically led legislature and a big supporter of Western and other public schools. Are Illinois citizens bracing, or should they brace for serious cuts in services this year because the revenues are not coming in?
What we are hearing in the Cliff Note version, if you will, of a 2,200 page bill that was dropped just last night, we are looking for a flat funding for this year, this fiscal year, on last year's revenues. Well, that being said, it doesn't dispel the fact that we have over $6 billion in a deficit. So it's ironic that you would promise flat funding, but you really don't know if that revenue is going to be there. What will we make up? You know, we have pushed off our income taxes till July, so certainly that will be revenue coming in. I'm hoping that our businesses are going to start being opened here shortly, and so we will see an increase in some sales taxes that we haven't seen, certainly. And we can't discount the fact that through the federal government, there is monies from the CARES Act and the HEROES Act and some of the other funding that will also be coming to our states and our municipalities.
We have talked a great deal about reopening the state. Everybody wants it reopened, right. And nobody really knows what the future is going to bring. There's been talk about, you know, kind of a slow growth once the state reopens. But there's some economists that call it a W, where it could go up, and then if we get a second phase of the pandemic, fall back down. Is that a real concern for you as far as opening too early, or perhaps not knowing what we don't know?
My biggest concern would be opening in a manner that is not responsible. And I believe that if we allow our businesses to open in a respectful, responsible manner, that we can keep that curve from escalating and then dropping too far, and perhaps dropping at all. It is my understanding, very good news as of today, that the governor is now saying that restaurants can open for outdoor dining in phase three. So that is certainly encouraging. I hope that we hear more and more of that. I spoke to the governor. I explained to him about some of the differences between the more rural areas, you know, central and downstate Illinois as opposed to Chicago. And I said, I fully understand the challenges that you are facing with Chicago and some of the larger communities. But you also have to understand what it's like in the communities that I live in, that I represent, at any given time there might be an owner that owns a small boutique store, a men's store, a ladies' store, a gift store, and on a busy day maybe there's four people in the store at the same time. It's not a water tower place or those kind of things. So I believe that there is a way that we can do this, reopen our state, allow our business owners to take responsibility, and act in a respectful manner.
Well, and a few moments ago, you heard the emergency sirens in the background. Hard to miss.
Yes.
It's hard not to also point out that perhaps Illinois' fiscal house is on fire as well. I mean, we are in an emergency situation now. And let's be honest, the state was in a tough situation before this. Is there an easy solution? I mean, you can either say, oh, we need to add more money here, or we need to cut deeper there. These are not going to be easy times once they even open the state.
No, absolutely not. You're right. This is a time where, regardless of party, regardless of be it a Senate, a House, you have to actually look at the realities that are facing our state and many other states right now. No one saw COVID-19 coming. No one anticipated what it would do to our economies. And, you know, we thought 2008 was bad. Well, Illinois really never recovered from 2008. So on top of 2008 and facing the challenges of that recovery, now we have a COVID-19 recovery. And it's going to put challenges before us in where our priorities are and how we continue to make Illinois a viable place for businesses and businesses not only to grow, but to locate.
You have heard the protesters. You have seen them. I'm sure that your office has responded to requests and comments from them as well. You know there's a wide spectrum of opinion when it comes to not only the science behind the virus, but also, as you were pointing out, the opening of the state. What do you say when there is not a black and white issue here and that there's no clear answer?
I say exactly what I said to the governor. Give individuals and businesses the ability to do what they think that their public needs, but do it in a responsible, respectable manner. Because we are willing, as you can see here today, we're willing to live with the CDC guidelines. We should be living with the CDC guidelines. And, you know, when I put on a mask, it's not about me. It's about you. It's about anybody else that I come in contact with. And it's about our families. When we leave here, whenever that is, and we go back home to our families, it's making sure that we've taken every precaution that we can. And I think the same can be said for our businesses.
Explain to me the rural areas as opposed to the urban areas. There's been a lot of discussion on the fact that maybe we're all shut down because of Chicago and the Ring counties. There is, you're nodding your head, so you obviously believe there's some truth to that?
There is some truth to that, but Chicago doesn't own COVID-19. The entire country owns COVID-19. And how we look at it as a state, and, you know, we can talk about other states and what they're doing, but that's not where we're living. And we are living in Illinois. It is not just a Chicago, it's not just Cook County. There are many counties throughout the state that are facing some significant challenges. And Will County, as we know, Lake County has some significant numbers. And even in West Central Illinois, we have numbers that you wouldn't suspect we would have. You know, in McDonough County, we have 74 positive cases. That's a significant number of cases. So it isn't something that we should take lightly. But again, we should put the CDC guidelines in place and do it in a manner that people can actually operate and get out and enjoy some of what is going on and try to have some semblance of normalcy and neighbor. And we haven't had that for a number of weeks.
It was interesting, and it's more than just a river that divides it, is that you looked at the statistics for Louisa County, Iowa, the Tyson plant there, the spike, and then just kitty corner across the river, Henderson County, that for the longest time had no case.
Right.
Both rural counties, but significantly different outcomes.
Right. Exactly. And those are some of the challenges that we've seen, certainly in the Warren County area, in the Cass County area, with our protein plants. And it is so difficult. And for people who have never been in a production plant of that kind, it's hard to fathom, but it is very difficult to have a separation when you are processing proteins like that. It is a well-oiled machine, and so they're having to rethink all of that. And as I talked about, those are populations of folks that generally it's a high Hispanic population, an African population, that their culture knows that they get up in the morning, they go to work, they earn for their family, and that's what they do. And so it's very difficult for them to say, I'm not going to go to work today. So I think, again, it's important that we take as many precautions for those folks that we possibly can. But we see those significant spikes, as you say, in those areas.
You are very active with higher education, of course.
I am.
And you have Western Illinois University in the heart of your district. How concerned are you for the future? The interim president saying we're going to try to be as normal as possible in the upcoming year, whatever normal is for institutions, brick and mortar institutions at
sure.
this point.
And I actually just in recent days had a sit-down conversation with President Abraham, and just an incredible individual that certainly has Western in his heart and wants to do the very best for Western and West Central Illinois. And Western is, knock on wood, we are looking good, and very positive outlook for going into the fall. And so it's incumbent upon us as a General Assembly to make sure that we have the tools in place for not only for Western, but for all of higher education, community colleges, 4 years, and our vocational and our technical. Because as we come to the other side of what this is, what COVID-19 is, as we come to the other side, higher education is going to be a significant cog in this wheel moving forward, because we're going to see a lot of people that may not have the same job to go back to that they had prior to this. And so they are going to be looking for furthering their education either at an associate's level or a four-year level that perhaps they never were able to complete, or even a vocational or a technical trade. So I think it's important that we put the best bang for the buck in that area.
But as you mentioned, as we come out of here, there may be a greater need for higher education.
Right.
But as we come out of this, we also are learning that there's different ways to educate our kids. And you talk about the campuses
sure.
and the brick and mortar, as opposed to the e-learning and all of the investments that professors, reluctantly in many cases, are doing right now. Does that give you pause about long-range future funding of higher education?
I think we are going to look at education across the board a little bit differently, and what we can do through e-learning, and what do online classes look like moving forward. And I feel that there are a lot of those areas, particularly in the gen ed courses, that sure, those can be done online and done differently than, you know, students in the classroom for some of those classes. But you'll never be able to substitute that for many of the majors that people are involved in. You know, let's take nursing, for example. You couldn't do all of your nursing 4 year online. It's just not possible. So I think there are some classes and some ways that e-learning will become a significant part of where we are looking forward, but I don't think it will ever replace the brick and mortar.
Also talking about education, I mean, you know, K-12 has been really hit by funding during the period of time when
yes.
there was a budget impasse. Now you have COVID-19 and perhaps no added money for school districts right now. Are you worried that we're falling back and we're not really helping the children, the workers of tomorrow?
You know, we made a promise to K-12 education. We're in our third year now of funding in this new adequacy level funding. And That was not arrived at easily. That was 4 years of hard work, a lot of people at the table, not just legislators, certainly, but educators, superintendents, people that know K through 12 inside and out. And we committed to $350 million a year in additional funding for 10 years. And we have been good to our word up to this point. But again, it's a 22-page document that I haven't peeled all the layers back. But I am hopeful that we can stick to that commitment again this year, because I've seen firsthand what these additional dollars have been able to do in our schools and how these teachers have been able to provide for these students. We are coming off a time where we had a double layer of teachers, if you will, because we had the teachers and then we had the parents that were teaching their children what the teachers wanted them to teach their children. So it's just, you know, it's a time that now is not the time to pull back and say, we're just kidding. We promised you that, but we're really not going to fulfill it.
One last question having to do with essential services.
Sure.
We've seen a shutdown. Essential services, we always thought, were like doctors, the garbage haulers and all that. But have we kind of learned that perhaps the state parks and in some ways the arts and some ways the recreation that people banked on were also essential services? And do you worry about them in the upcoming budget, as well as any other future, God forbid, shutdown that the state could face?
You know, our state parks, particularly in the areas that we live in, are a getaway. They're a very reasonable getaway. I mean, you don't have to spend a dollar to go to the state park and enjoy that with your family or even by yourself. And when we shut all those down, it had a significant impact on a lot of our folks that is their recreation, that is their family outing, that's what they do as a family unit. And so as we move forward, I'm hopeful that we don't make that mistake again. And again, I had the conversation with the governor. I get the challenges that you have with Grant Park and Maggie Daly Park and Millennium Park. But we can be in our state parks as an individual and walk around for an hour and never see another human being. So it's all a matter of what responsibility do you take. And, you know, our museums, they'll be a long time coming back. And so often they depend on dollars from the community and how they raise dollars in that way. And it's going to take them a long time to come back from this, because a lot of that endowment money, it's just not there.
You have mentioned that you've had a talk with the governor.
Uh-huh.
How do you characterize that? Because in some ways, it's said that the Republicans have had really no say, at least legislatively, definitely no.
Right.
Tell me about that process. Do you think the Republicans or even the legislative branch has had much input over the last few weeks, and what about moving forward?
I would say it's been very limited, definitely very limited. And while I have had a conversation with the governor, I've only had one, and a few other members of our leadership team have also had conversations with the governor. Do I think that, did we fully agree on everything? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But I'm hopeful that some of the things that I shared with him, we are beginning to see the fruits of that coming out, particularly with churches. I shared significant information as a follow-up to our call on what many of our priests and ministers felt they could do in order to open up services for their parishioners and their church members. So I'm hopeful that he takes some of that information and implements it as we move into whatever our next phase is.
And let's leave it at that. You are by nature hopeful, and optimistic.
I am.
Explain to me what you're optimistic about now, and what do you think of the people of Western Illinois who have gone through this period of sheltering in place, or some of the people that have been infected or have been really significantly impacted?
You know, this is a time that I think psychologically for a lot of people has been very difficult, and it will be very difficult for them going forward. I think about the families that have lost loved ones throughout this, and they were not able to be with them when they were dying, and they certainly were not able to share a proper funeral service with family and friends. And those are times that are going to be very difficult in people's minds for a long time going forward. And it's incumbent upon us as a state to be sure that we have services in place for those folks to help them work through their grief and work through any psychological challenges that they're facing.
Noreen Hammond, Assistant Minority Leader in the Illinois House. Illinois and Iowa residents are doing a good job responding to the 2020 census, but the numbers, over 60%, are still below the final tabulation rate of 10 years ago. Lawmakers say state and local governments are already heavily impacted by the COVID-19 virus, and now is more important than ever to be counted as federal dollars are allocated to local governments based on population. In other words, have you been counted?
The census counts everyone in this country, and that really means everyone. A hospital patient, yes, that person counts. Newborn Benjamin, yeah, little Ben now counts. Two families that live in the same house, sure thing, they all count. Or David, who's living in his cousin Daniel's garage, he also counts. The census counts everyone to make things better for all of us.
Many of you are staying home, avoiding crowds, keeping safe, and that means concerts, of course, are canceled and local musicians are being kept off the stage. We'll continue to feature some of those artists and their original works, musicians like Mo Carter, who joined us at the Black Box Theater in Moline to perform an original, Hardware Man.
Here and Union Boulevard, time goes
Carter and Hardware Man. Although Iowa and Illinois businesses are starting to reopen, we know the closures and all the changes in your life are taking a toll. In so many ways, you are not alone. If you feel overwhelmed, reach out to the Robert Young Center or Unity Point Trinity Health in the Illinois Quad Cities, or the Vera French Center and Genesis Health in the Iowa Quad Cities. The helplines are open right now. They stay open 24/7, or just type crisis hotline in Google to have some help finding a helping hand, a friendly voice, a safety net to get you through these difficult times. And we invite you to explore our coronavirus resources and information anytime at WQPT. We have regional content with links for Illinois, Iowa, and national resources. For parents and families, we're pleased to share a variety of content for home learning, family activities, and much more. And for educators, we're also pleased to offer content about navigating through distant learning, lesson planning, and more. It's all made possible by viewers like you. So please know that we are here to serve you and our shared communities in any way we can. On the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on The Cities.